What's up, everyone, and welcome back to Metalcore Nerds. This is the Hawkeye After Show, talking about Hawkeye Episode 4. And back with me is my co-host, Austin. What's going on?
Yep. What's going on, Sean? How are you today?
Doing pretty good. Got a haircut.
Oh, let's go.
Seeing stick to your guns tonight. It's a pretty good day.
Who else is on that tour? That's a good one.
Straight from the Path and End. And there's this other band, I think Stand Still, that I'm not familiar with at all. But should be cool. I'm excited. Okay. I'm excited. You're playing a show tonight, correct?
Dope. We play here in San Diego with the Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, which I never got into them back in the day. But this is a very particular show because it was booked for March 2020. And like 3 weeks before we are gonna play the show, it got canceled. And then this entire last 2 years, nobody knew if the show was going to come back or not. And then the entire lineup and the tour package and the local, us being the local on this one, it's all the same as it was back in March 2020. So kind of like a special, I don't know, the show that wasn't supposed to happen is going to happen tonight. So we're all kind of waiting for something to happen to where the show gets canceled or something. But yeah, we're stoked, man. Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, and then our good friends, Dead American, which is Cove from Seosin his new band. So we're both managed by our buddy Joey. So they're kind of our brother band. We borrowed their van when we went on tour and stuff. So good. It'll awesome. Be just a good hang tonight. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw them in LA when I was in LA a few years ago.
Super sick band, good people. Yeah. And yeah, they're the best.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much Cove was a surfer bro, and that kind of threw me off a little. but other than that, I was I did not, I don't know what I pictured him to be like as a person in real life, but it wasn't that. And I was all right.
No, he's the chillest dude. So yeah, he sang on the last song on our album that we put out this year. And we were writing the song and told Joey, we're like, hey, we were thinking maybe Cove could sing on this part. And so Joey calls Cove and he's like, yo, Cove, what are you up to? And Cove's like, I'm just chilling, bro. And then Joey's like, you want to record a song? And Cove's like, yeah. And so he's like, I'll be over in 15 minutes. And then 15 minutes later, literally he just walks into the door in a cloud of smoke, hops behind the mic and puts this chorus down and then just disappears into the night.
Amazing. That's incredible. It's sick. I'm glad we got to that story because that was good. I like that one.
No, Cove from Dead American Seosin, just special man. I love that guy. And so, yeah, shout out to him. I know a lot of people love that
cool
guy.
Cool band. Yeah, cool band. And I mean, Seosin was, as most of us probably around our age, a big band for us when we were growing up. So
yeah, absolutely.
I saw them with Cove and Maylene in 2010 Ooh. Or something.
Long huge
I don't remember what year it was, but
I named my first dog Dallas after Dallas from Maylene Under Oath.
I've seen him a few times.
Love
I
it.
Actually
Love
saw them band. It might have been their last tour they did years and years ago. It was probably near 2013 or something, and they played this really really small venue in Syracuse, and it was cool to see them in a small venue, but it was also sad. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was before all the fucked up shit happened with Dallas when he got in that crazy accident and all that stuff. Yeah.
I think he's on the road to recovery. He's still not well, but that's such a relief because I think people thought he was not going to make it for a while.
Yeah. I know there's this one guy I know who's me and him are friends, and he's actually really close to them, and he said he's been doing a lot better. Well, this is a while ago, but so I'd assume he's doing even better now. So that's good. That's another band. I had a lot of love for that band. I mean, I still do, but especially
when
I learned all of Volume 2 on guitar.
Of course. I'm the worst guitarist ever. And I learned those songs. Not to say that they're easy, but they were so fun. And I took the time to learn those riffs. Yeah.
I think I remember a lot of them still, which is weird because I feel like I've forgotten a lot of stuff I used to know on guitar because I just don't play anymore. But I think I could probably play most of that record still.
Volume 2 is the Brick Walker. Brick Walker, don't leave me stranded. Oh, yeah. So good.
I think it's their first I think it was the first like full length. Because I think one was just the EP technically. I think I could be wrong. But
I love that band. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Oh, that band. Rest in peace, Maylee. Dude, I heard a disaster.
I heard they might do things again.
Oh, please. I'd love that.
So if it happens, I'm fucking here for it. So we're here to talk about some nerd shit, but it's nice to talk about music too. I like mixing the worlds. All right. I mean, that's why I made this thing. But before we get into Hawkeye episode 4, we have some other shit to talk about. All right. Is there something you got to say?
I just laugh that we get so easily sidetracked by like one comment, and it's like
I can talk about anything I'm interested in. So if you say something, I'm off with it. So it's like the theme of this podcast is
Miles Morales. Let's talk a little Miles. Let's go.
So yeah, this past week we got our first look into Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse Part 1. Which means we're at least getting a trilogy within the Spider-Verse movies. We might get more. I would not be surprised if they keep going after. I mean, there could be a part 3. We have no idea. I know some people got mad by the part 1 because they're like, oh, well, obviously it's going to end in a cliffhanger and leave the part 2. And I'm like, I guess. I mean, they did it with before Endgame was Endgame. It was supposed to be Infinity War part 2. No one was mad that we knew we were getting one after. Like, it didn't take anything away from it, but we got more of Spider-Man 2099, which was from the post-credit scene of the first movie. Miguel O'Hara, voiced by the amazing Oscar Isaac, who is getting top billing with Miles and Gwen. So it seems to be he's going to be a very big part of this movie. We don't know. I've heard that not a lot of the same Spider people are going to come back that we saw in the first. I know Spider Woman has been confirmed. Issa Rae is voicing Spider Woman. Jessica Drew, which is very, very cool. We haven't really seen an iteration of Spider Woman in any form of media, probably in 20 years or something, maybe longer. So that'll be really cool. There's been a lot of talks of her coming into live action too. So we'll see. What better way to test it than animation, you know? And so I'm interested to see what other Spider-Men we get in this. You know, it's the multiversal Spider-Man thing seems to be a popular thing we're doing. Well, not confirmed, but I mean, come on. You know.
Well, my initial hype on this is like off the charts because Spider-Verse, I was telling people that might have been my favorite like comic book movie of all time. And I know that's like an extremely scorching hot take because you put that up against like The Dark Knight. And I know we've talked about that. I loved the first one and I saw it in the theater multiple times. I dragged people to it because like I don't think people understood what it was, that it was a cartoon. And I dragged people to the theater and just had the privilege of like introducing them to this amazing movie. Even my wife, who is not a huge comic book fan, not even like a movie person, just watches this movie every once in a while. We'll throw it on Netflix or wherever it's streaming.
That's awesome.
It's so fun and the heart behind it. And
so good.
I mean, obviously the animation style and the writers, like I could go on and on. And so I was shocked to get this first glimpse. I didn't know what it was even when I was clicking through to it because it didn't make sense on how movies and studios market their movies. Like there was no trailer and all of a sudden there's a scene from it and you're like, wait, what am I watching? And it was a full scene.
It was like a Brazilian Comic-Con or something, like CCXP or something. And so Sony dropped a lot of stuff. That's where that villain panel from Spider-Man No Way Home was. That scene of Morbius that dropped, it was in the same thing. So that's why it dropped at like 9 at night. Because I was hanging out with my friend, John. We were just watching movies and stuff. And I just looked at social media and I saw, you know, Spider-Verse first look. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, and so like we end up watching a bunch of that stuff after in between movies. We like watched through that and the Morbius stuff and everything. It was a very pleasant surprise, but I definitely echo your sentiments about the first movie. Sam and I went to see it just, you know, it's a Spider-Man movie. It's a movie. We usually see a lot of movies anyway. Zero expectations of what it was going to be. Then we watch it and we're like, holy fuck, what is this? Like, this is unbelievable. And I'm so happy that movie was like an unexpected hit. It won Animated Best Picture. It's an Oscar-winning movie. but no one expected it. And now that everyone knows, oh yeah, this shit is for real. Now we can finally, like, you see it when he first goes, after he sees Gwen and he goes to that first scene with Spider-Man 2099, they're in completely different art style world, which in the first one, it was kind of the other way around. It was, we were in Miles's Earth, and then we saw the other Spider-Man or Spider people or beings. I guess there was a pig too. They all came in, but their different art styles lived in Miles' world. Now we get to see the other way around, which I think is going to be unbelievable to witness, seeing all these different art styles for whatever world we end up going through. And now that they have a specific device that allows them to travel through the multiverse. I have no idea what this movie is about. We have nothing to know, like, what the villain could be, or, you know, it kind of seems like he goes on a multiversal joyride with Gwen and, you know, chaos ensues. Maybe it could not even be that. We have no idea. And I always, and we'll talk about more about having no idea how stuff is going to end or play out with this Hawkeye episode. And that's the best thing you can have, especially in today's day and age where all these leaks or rumors and everyone wants to find out every little detail of everything. It's nice to be like, I have no idea where this is going.
No. The fact that the Spider-Verse, they're not playing by anybody's rules. Like, there are no rules in those movies, so there's no pre-existing comic arc. There's no expectations on a villain who shows up, like, just all the different twists and turns that they did. My cats are a lot more aggressive today, so if you see my banner moving, it's my cats. He just is like,
that's awesome.
Sorry.
I just figured you had a fan blowing on you to make the flag.
No, anybody listening, there's cats running around my garage. But I just love that there's no rules, and so you go in with no expectations, and even villains or story arcs that they're gonna play around with, it's all out there. And even just different versions of Spider-Man characters that they can bring in. And I kind of like, part of me, I had to think about it because I'm kind of sad that we might not be able to see Spider-Pig or Spider-Man Noir again. But that if they are able to let those characters go, I think that just allows that first movie to be even more special, because Nick Cage's performance, John Mulaney's performance, like, everything that we had in that movie was just, I mean, pretty, pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, because there's supposed to be TV shows in the same kind of multiverse as this and everything like that. I mean, there hasn't really been much news since the movie kind of hit big a few years ago. But I know there's supposed to be like a whole Spider-Verse universe kind of thing, which I'm all here for. We'll see. I don't know. There hasn't really been much news on it since then.
I love that they're the ones who maybe cracked like the multiverse thing, because then – now Marvel MCU is kind of playing in that realm. And like, what if, and I said it on Twitter, I said it to you a couple times, like, everybody's talking about Toby and Andrew, Spider-Man's coming into the No Way Home. Like, what if Miles Morales showed up, like a cartoon version of him, or like the animated spider from the 90s? Like, I would lose my mind if they started to combine like live action and computer action.
Who knows?
I know.
Yeah. I personally think it's a little early for Miles. Because of Tom Holland's age, but that's my only thing. If he showed up, I'd still probably be stoked as fuck. It's just, I don't want to see like an MCU or an even, the lines are being blurred between Sony Marvel stuff and MCU, especially with the Venom, Let There Be Carnage after credits scene. Jared Leto in this, he like introduced the scene, and he pretty much just said, "The multiverse is opened in No Way Home," and he said something along the lines of, "Things are about to get more sinister," like teasing that there's going to be a Sinister Six. Like, that's been my big theory. If you're in the group, you've seen it, is that I don't think we're getting the Sinister Six in No Way Home. I think it's more going to be like Spider-Men versus like four or five people, because I think Alfred Molina is going to end up helping them. That's it's really what it seems like. And these trailers, I think they're all misdirection anyway, so I could be ungodly wrong. But I think they will save a Sinister Six for what they've already been building in the MCU with Tom Holland, Spider-Man, later on for him to take by himself. I mean, we already have Scorpion. We already have Vulture. Now we have Venom. Kraven's coming. You know, like, Morbius is coming. It's easy to... I mean, Mysterio is probably not fucking dead, so he can come back and be part of the Sinister Six. Like, it's easy, like, we don't know if any of these multiversal villains are staying in the MCU or they're gonna, we have no idea what's gonna happen with them. Like, some of them could stay in this world and just be MCU canon until the future. Like, we have no idea if we're gonna get our own version of Doc Ock or Green Goblin or Electro or whatever. We have no idea, you know, especially with, like, Multiverse of Madness and everything coming, we have no idea.
I love that Tom Holland's pitching Timothy Chalamet to be Harry Osborn, because that's like such prime casting.
I will not accept anything else. So
correct. I totally agree with that. So two quick notes on that. One, I'm just all for what they're doing with the Spider-Man character in the MCU. I really like Tom Holland. I know everybody's got their own opinions. I think that they've done a really good job with him. So next week we'll have seen No Way Home. And I think let's go. This is really exciting. And I think that they're going to do some really cool stuff with that movie. I loved that villain panel. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch it there. It's Willem Dafoe, Jamie Foxx, and Alfred Molina just kind of answering a couple blanket questions about it. And one, you could tell that Jamie Foxx just like hated his Electro character and the fact that he was blue. And he's talking about how this version's like hip and he's able to like be like a cool bad guy this time around. And then Willem Dafoe is just like the weirdest guy.
Yeah.
And in that interview, he's just sitting there talking. And I don't know if I've ever seen interviews with him. And I watched it a couple times just because his mannerisms, he's such a good actor. And you can see like different characters that come out in just the way he normally talks. So I was laughing at that. But he says, not a spoiler way, he's like, their suits get upgrades, which it implies maybe there's like that Stark stuff that we talked about on the last episode. And I think you've seen that where Doc Ock's arms look a little different. Electro has the reactor on him. So I'm so excited. I mean, just, we've talked every episode, we talk about the rest of this year. And the new little teaser for Boba Fett came out. Like, we're in like such a good little run for the next couple of weeks. So
yeah, this month is a wild time for anyone who's into pop culture at all. And another little piece, it's not a little piece of news, I know, it's a pretty big news item, but it also kind of ties with No Way Home, possibly, and possibly even the Hawkeye series in some way, shape, or form. But Kevin Feige on the junket for No Way Home was being interviewed by Cinema Blend, and he confirmed that Charlie Cox will be playing Daredevil in the MCU. He confirmed it. Well, he said if Daredevil was to be in the MCU, Charlie Cox would be playing it. I mean, why else would you say that other than he's going to be? He just said when, how, if, like he said that we don't know, which if I was a betting man, which I'm not, but I would bet money that that at least Matt Murdock will make an appearance in the layout.
Mm-hmm. I'm so interested to see what happens with that, because the tone, I was just thinking about the tone of like Hawkeye, like if he would fit in Hawkeye, and the tone of those Daredevil shows was so different than what the MCU is doing. I think it'll be nice to see Charlie Cox be able to maybe take like a lighter tone. And I know Daredevil has a lot of darker nuances and some of the stuff that, like, you know, Mark Miller did with the character in Mark Miller, right? Is that the Sin City? And some of the stuff that they did. But I'm excited to see like him, I don't know, get to play around maybe in like a little bit of a brighter area. So that's exciting. I mean, he crushed it in that role.
Perfect.
And when they already have an A+ like character and actor in the position, why not just utilize that? I think it's a smart move by Feige, which he doesn't often make bad decisions. So
no, and he usually doesn't reveal things like this. So it was kind of telling in a way. He's the most interesting person to listen to interview, because he kind of gives you little snippets, but then also gives you nothing. And it's so fascinating to hear him answer questions, because you know the interviewers have to work so hard to try and give him something like a unique type of question, because he knows, at this point, they know he's not going to give anything away. You know, there's no way. But him giving away something like that was pretty big. And it could be because of, you know, some of the leaks with No Way Home. And, you know, obviously the alluring question of Wilson Fisk showing up in the Hawkeye series. You know, maybe he was just giving us a little wink and a nod to like, hey, like, I get some shit got leaked, but, you know, I'm going to get in front of it a little bit with this kind of news. But I'm stoked. And like you said, I will, obviously those series, pretty much all of the Netflix series were very dark. Like almost all of them were very, very dark. And as we've even seen in pretty much all of the Disney Plus MCU series, they have that darkness to them. It's been some of the most dark MCU stuff we've seen. Mm-hmm. So it would be nice to see them have that dark stuff, but also be in a world where, you know, there is like comedic value. You know, I know Marvel absolutely kind of shit on for the comedic value, but you can't ignore now that they have the depth of insanely emotional moments while having the comedy too. It's they've found like a very nice blend, in my opinion. Especially like, well, we're going to get into that with this episode. There was so much like laugh out loud moments to, oh wow, I'm crying on my couch.
Yeah. I think my final thought on Daredevil real quick is I kind of hope he doesn't show up in Hawkeye, because I think that they have too much stuff to get through in the next two episodes that at some point you're cramming what, like a 10-pound sausage in a 5-pound bag type of thing, where there's just like too much to go. There's like too much to get through. And I want like every character that we've been introduced to, especially now, spoilers from now on with a certain Black Widow showing up. Like there's a lot that we got to go through in the next couple episodes. So I hope they don't cram too much into it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think he's going to show up in this, but I think for future stuff, he's definitely going to play a pivotal role, especially in the New York based kind of grounded level things. I think we're going to see him a lot more than people probably expect, which is exciting.
Yeah, so let's talk about Hawkeye.
Man, this fucking show. every week I'm like amazed by how much this show surprised me. And I mean, most people know I'm a big Marvel MCU guy anyway, but this show has been like the Loki show I expected to be amazing, and it was. And it was even better than I thought it was going to be. Same with like WandaVision, and Falcon Winter Soldier was for the most part really good, but I expected those. With this one, I was like, oh, this will be fun. You know, I'm familiar with the Bat Fraction run. So I was like, this will be cool to see in like the MCU light. But it's been very surprising how fucking good this series is. And well, I'm here
even
for it.
Even just the start of the start of the episode. I mean, I think that they've made very, very good decisions in their storytelling. And they've kind of what we were talking about last week with like a little bit of the mystery box. And so the cliffhanger on this one is like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen with Jack and Clint in their confrontation? And I just love that it just, boom, it was over. And he's like, oh my gosh, there's an Avenger in my house. And I think just the decisions that they're making up to this point, they've been very economical in how they've told the story. And there was like, what are the scenarios? Oh, there's this big fight scene and Hawkeye and Jack are sword fighting and there's like this action sequence, but then they end up like, you know, not killing each other. And then we sit at the table. Like there's some ramifications of that I don't think that were necessary. So they're like, oh, he just acknowledges like, wow, there's an Avenger in my house and thank you for saving the world. And I thought that was like really, really smart in how they handled that. To echo what you're saying, I know probably it's a little bit annoying for people to listen just that we're like singing praises on the show constantly, but I really think that they've done a really good job of writing the story, and I think it's been a fun ride so far.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, people have heard me on after shows saying stuff I don't like. I was very clear in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier that I was pissed that Sharon Carter was a power broker. I was very adamant about that. So, I mean, people have seen me be subjective, but if I like something, I like something. And if something surprises me in a way I didn't think it would, and this show has in many ways. And like you were saying, it starts off right where we left off. You know, Jack has their own sword to Clint's throat, and Eleanor comes in, and you can see the way she reacts to seeing that Clint is in her house is very interesting. And we've kind of talked about how kind of obvious it is that it seems like Jack is the red herring. They're trying to push Jack as the bad guy, but it's really Eleanor kind of using him, which mostly everyone seems to be like, yeah, there's no way Jack's the actual bad guy. It's really Eleanor, right? And Jack could be not necessarily a good guy, but not the worst person in the room, if that makes sense. And I think that might be more of the case. But in this episode, he just seemed like a kind of nice guy. Like he was a little bit douchey to Kate maybe in earlier episodes, but he just seemed like kind of a nice dude. Like you said, he thanked Clint for saving the world. And He just seemed enamored that he was sitting across from Avenger. You know what I mean? He seemed stoked. He was just happy to be there.
To jump ahead a little bit, he like gets his like phrasing wrong and he's dancing and singing. Like, yeah, yep. I think that for sure he's a red herring. And well, we'll see. Like, I think he's involved in this to a certain extent, but I think Eleanor is partnering up with him through a potential marriage, I think, for it's probably to further her, you know, business, that whatever that money. Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because obviously he's rich too. It's not like she isn't, but usually when people are corrupt rich people, the only thing they want is more money and power. So what more to get more money than marry into it, you know?
Well, and there's a specific reason I think that she wants Hawkeye out of the picture. Like, all right, you can drop this case, my dude. Like,
yep. And that's exactly what I was about to get to. Clint to leave. Well, she kind of asks Clint to leave, and on his way out, he does take the Ronin sword, which New Rockstars pointed out, they actually show you in the reflection and Kate like looking over to see him take it and stuff like that, which I totally missed and was like, man, that's some attention to detail. That's unbelievable. People who make this shit, like, kudos to you, because this shit is the shit you think of is wild. It's very, very cool. The directors of this episode were the same directors of the last episode. They different director. This is like Bert and Birdie. They're like a pair. I think it was one person for episodes 1 and 2. These last two episodes have been them, and they're unbelievable. Like, they're phenomenal. From the car chase scene to everything in this episode, wow, so cool. But like you said, Eleanor kind of brings up like, hey, can you drop this? And we've kind of seen her do this, but to Kate the whole series, like, hey, not like straight up saying it, but she's always kind of alluded to like, stay out of this, you know, like, don't get involved, because she probably knows what the fuck is going on. You know what I mean? Like, she knows.
Reminds me of Dewey everything. Cox in Dewey Cox when he's like, you don't want none of this stuff, Dewey. Like,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like, hey, chill out. And that's what he kind of tries to do for Clint. And Clint's like, I can't drop this case, but I'll keep your daughter safe, which, you know, he can't, you know, he's got to take care of this shit. As he's leaving, he texts his wife Laura to get info on Sloan Limited. And then she calls him and reveals that Sloan Limited is a money laundering company for what Clint refers to as the big guy, another, you know, kingpin nod, I guess. And, and Jack is the CEO of Sloan Limited. So it's another thing of them trying to push, hey, Jack's the bad guy, you know. Which again, like we said, he probably is involved to an extent, but it seems like Eleanor is the one really, you know, pulling the strings there. And then Laura just, you know, speaks in German randomly and asks about the Rolex. We're not crazy. The watch matters. All right. We're not crazy. The watch matters.
I laughed when she mentioned the watch, because we've been talking about that. And like, it's like, yeah, there you go.
You did the Leo point and you're like, ah, the watch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Still don't know what it is.
I have some ideas, maybe, but it could be very wrong. So it seems like Laura here, this is a big revealing scene for her. She could have been a SHIELD agent, maybe, and worked with Natasha and Clint. You know, maybe that's why she never questioned, you know, anything with Clint and Natasha. Not like there was ever any like overt sexual tension between them, but I mean, obviously they were best friends. That's very apparent. But the fact that she could speak German, she shook down a tracksuit mafia member and flipped him from Missouri. Just, you know, while she's like doing Christmas shit with the kids, like, that's no normal mom farmhouse thing. You know what I mean? Like, seemed like she had some sort of involvement in the espionage spy world. And it would make sense that she might have been a member of SHIELD. And that's kind of how her and Clint met. And part of the deal eventually is she got out and she went and they made their home in Missouri and she was out of the picture. It's very plausible, but it's very cool. It adds more to what we talked about last week. You know, it's like, oh, she's very involved. She knows what's going on. He's not trying to hide shit from her. It's like, well, she's a fucking spy. You know?
I've been really... I've been really pleased with that. I know we talked about it at length, and I just think that they're doing a really smart job of incorporating Laura into this. And they so easily could have made this like the pissed off wife at home whose husband is working too much. And that's like such a tired cliche, in my opinion. And I think it's really smart that they're folding her into this. She knows everything that he's doing. And she's very much a part of this because she wants to protect him as well. And then that ties into seeing that that Echo has a list and the names of the kids and stuff. Like, they know stuff about their family. And so I think Laura understands that, like, because of these decisions, our family at length, that we're at risk.
Yeah. And then we kind of shift back to the Bishop household. And then you were kind of talking about this of how he was getting, Jack was getting the aphorisms wrong, and him and Eleanor dance. And you see Kate kind of turn a corner with Jack in a way where she sees that, like, oh, her mom's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes her happy. Because why wouldn't it? You know what I mean? Her dad died, which it's still not solved if Eleanor was the case of the reason for her dad dying, which I'm assuming will be revealed. Maybe not. I don't know. We've seen in these series that not every question gets answered, because it's hard with these, you know. It's a one series and part of a very overcapsulated story, so not everything is going to get answered. They need to have things that will get answered down the road, but I feel like for this story they would kind of have to. I feel like there's gonna be a big reveal of Eleanor, you know, being a shitty person, and it's gonna affect Kate a lot, I would imagine.
I don't want that to be true, because I want Kate to be happy.
I know. It's like, going to crush her.
Yeah.
It's going to crush her. She, like, you can see she loves her mom so much. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, of course, like, she has an amazing front to have a legit reason why she's rich. You know, a security company. And it's obviously, like, a high-class, like, high-level security company. It's pretty easy to be like, oh, yeah, of course we're rich. I mean, my mom owns a security company. It's very, you know, it's very very profitable. But, you know, she finds out she's, like, you know, Madam Mask or some part of the criminal underworld. That's exactly what she's fighting against. So it's not going to sit well with her at all. It's going to be devastating.
I was so pleased with Tony Dalton singing in that scene, by the way. Like, that he was just like, he was on time, but it was like the wrong key, and he sold that whole thing. I thought it was so funny.
I think he's a delight, honestly. He kind of just makes me smile anytime. At least in this episode, he just made me smile when he was on screen. I don't know.
If you have not watched Better Call Saul, Tony Dalton plays a character named Lalo, who is so terrifying, and he's so good in that role. And so, if you're looking for more Tony Dalton, like, obviously, tune into Better Call Saul. They're gonna wrap that up, I think, in the next couple years with that show and stuff. But he's just such an amazing actor, and I just love having him, like, come into the MCU and just, he's having fun.
Yeah, I have not seen that show. I have seen Breaking Bad.
You got to watch it. It's super sick.
Got to add that one to my list. my friend is a very big Bear Call Saul fan, so I'm going to see him tonight. He's coming to the show with us. I'm going to ask him about Tony Dalton in that show. What was his character's name?
Lalo. Lalo. He's like a cartel character from Mexico, and he's terrifying. And imagine, like, the same smile and the same charisma, but then at the same time he's just gonna, like, murder people. Like,
I like that. I like that. That sounds awesome. Yeah, he'll probably, because he has slept on Hawkeye so far, but he is in college and it's like finals and all that shit. And I told him, I was like, dude, it's so fucking good. You need to watch it. So he's gonna watch it, but I think if I tell him that would be another another, you know, it's a fuel the fire. But then we see Clint go back to the safe house to Kate's aunt's house, and he's, you know, iced up his wounds. Again, this dude's human. And I'll say it again, this has been the most human thing we've ever seen in the MCU, and I think that's part of what makes the show so special, I think. I think that's a very, very big part, is how relatable in a way it is.
Icing his wounds with frozen slushy margaritas or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you got to be resourceful, you know what I mean? you got to use what you got. Kate actually joins him with some holiday cheer. This whole scene is so great for so many ways. I'll break it down a little bit. She brings some pizza. And she brings some sweaters, she brings some movies and movie marathon kind of to help him feel better about missing it with his family. Kate asks about more about Trick Arrows, and Clint kind of reveals that the stock for the, or whatever you call it, a part of the arrow, you need that part to make more Trick Arrows. So they got it. It's got to be a special part. You know, maybe now that he's not an actual Avenger and there's no Avengers headquarters, you know, there are probably not many around. It's not like, you know, he's just, you know, manufacturing them in his farm in Missouri. And she asks about a boomerang arrow, which he calls stupid, which is hilarious because in the car scene in the comics, he actually uses a boomerang arrow, or Kate uses a boomerang arrow, but it's used in the comics, which I thought was really funny. He talks about the coin trick of him flicking the coin and knocking someone out from 20 feet away. And that he teaches to Kate, which is also from the Matt Fraction comics. His brother is actually the one who teaches him that in the comics, which is really, really cool. Oh, another run about, I totally missed this, about the Jack and Clint confrontation. They obviously don't know each other. So it's a very different thing from the comics. He was not his mentor. They obviously did not know each other at all, which is totally fine. I just know we kind of brought that up last episode to see, like, oh, what if they know each other? How awkward would that be or something?
So my question is, what does Kate need to do in the finale that requires her to flick a coin?
What's she going
to do? Chekhov's coin flip here.
Yeah, it's going to happen. You know it. You know they did not introduce a nice slow motion action shot for nothing. You know? But it is a cool trick. It is. Clint does use it in the comics too. It's really cool. He like used it in a fight scene and everything. And then they get back to the serious moments of this episode, those are my favorite parts of this episode. I really did love, like, you know, the cheer, uplifting kind of stuff. But this stuff is what really sent this episode into the stratosphere for me personally. They're just kind of, you know, asking questions. You can kind of see their bond. Like each episode, we've seen their bond start to grow. For sure. It's very apparent. And Kate asked about the best shot he's ever taken. And Clint said, the best shot I ever taken was the one I didn't take. And then he recalls how he was sent to kill Natasha back in the day when he was working for S.H.I.E.L.D. And he said he thought it looked like she wanted out, and he was right. And at first he didn't want to tell. He said it was a sad story. And I think he said it was a sad story because of how the story concluded. Ends up with her dying on Vormir. And as he's talking about this, the same score from Vormir is slightly playing in the background. It's like a little bit softer. And it comes back later in the episode, which was very, very powerful for me. But man, this scene, wow. And that's why I've loved about these series so much. Obviously, there's been some really cool action, some really cool reveals. But the scenes where people are just sitting down and talking have been some of the most powerful stuff in all of these series. Even in the movies, we're starting to see, you know, there's like dinner scenes with people sitting and talking. You know, it's like what I've been talking about. They're adding more character stuff in to make the action and everything and the consequences mean more, which you can't ask for anything more than that with this stuff. But what did you think of this interaction here?
Yeah, and a writer that I've been following for years and years, Alan Sepinwall, he used to have a blog called What Alan's Watching, and he kind of came up through Prime TV and Prestige TV with like The Sopranos and reviewing that stuff. He writes for Rolling Stones now, and he was highlighting this episode and comparing it to the episode in Loki where Loki and the female Loki are, I can't remember her name.
Sylvie,
thank you. They're on the train on the planet that's blowing up, and they have an opportunity just to sit down and get to know each other. And I think that the smart thing that they're doing with this show and the Marvel shows in general is that they have the space to do something like that. Where I think in a movie there's such a crunch to get, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. You know, maybe with like No Way Home, it's going to be an hour and a half, but there's so much plot that they have to get through in those episodes that there's not a ton of time to really slow down the pace and dial that in because that's so affecting. And obviously they pay off that scene later in the episode with the rooftop fight. But I think it's just such a cool way for us to really get into the mental space of Clint and giving consequences to those, the path that they've taken. I mean, this guy has wounds. He's killed so many people. And this goes into Kate finally finding out that he was Ronin and being like, hey, it was okay that you did that, which a little bit of a hand wave that he has. It's implied that he's killed a lot of people. It's they're hand waving that he's, you know, ruined a lot of lives with what he did. But I think just like allowing her to get into his headspace and then for her to see the impact that one that Black Widow had on his life, but that becoming Ronin and losing his family in the blip. Like, I think that that's stuff that's not just going to pay dividends in this show, but I think in future episodes or future series where we see Hawkeye, like we're going to get to know like, okay, this guy's carrying a lot of weight, which we see him as Ronin. Like, obviously he's had some stuff and he's gone through some stuff. But I think in a situation like this, you start to be able to see and he's able to talk about it. And then, I mean, Jeremy Renner and Hayley Stanfield are doing such a good job in these characters and acting that you can see in his face that he's sad. Like, even just the fact that he's not able to be with his family and stuff. I say that they're having fun, but I mean, they're just doing such a good job in these roles. And I love seeing a scene like that where it just slows down and you get two people sitting on a couch. They've had some cocktails and now they're just sharing their emotions, which I'm impressed they could handle their liquor pretty well. So
kudos to them.
Yes.
And then before Izzy's going to sleep and Kate finds out that he was Ronin, there's like a flash of him as Ronin, him losing his family in the beginning of Endgame, him reuniting with his family. Presumably it was probably filmed during the Endgame movie and they just never used it. They could have possibly planned for it to be the series or not. I would assume that the series was already in some sort of production at that point. And then you see the flash of him and Natasha and Boromir. They've been using flashbacks in this show particularly very, very well. I mean, they kind of have in all the kind of shows, or seeing a different perspective from a past event. You know, everything like that, it's been very cool. Like, even in WandaVision, we saw totally new footage of, you know, stuff with a Hydra testing on her and shit like that. Her talking about the bomb and her family and stuff like that. It's very cool to see things that were, like, referenced and then totally brought to life and everything like that. I mean, they have a lot to play with, but it's smart that they start to play with it. But,
yeah.
This carries over into the next day, and, so I make little outlines with kind of bullet points of how the episode breaks down. I labeled this spy shit. I hope Austin appreciated that. I call this spy
shit. I see it. Yep, I love it.
So Clint sends Kate to the LARPers because he found out that a bunch of his trick arrows were confiscated and are in some police compound. He knows that the LARPers are made up of mostly like first responders and cops. So he's like, hey, go there, see if you can get my arrows back for me. As she's doing that, he pays Kazi a visit, which honestly, this scene was pretty hilarious. He calls Kazi a doormat. I love how he goes to reach for another weapon and he's like, oh, this, yeah, I got it. Like, come on, man.
That reminds me of the scene in Mad Max Fury Road Mad Max gets in the war rig and Furious is like trying to get all the weapons and they just like keep finding different spots where there's weapons.
Yes.
Kazi's got like stuff just like hidden everywhere.
And they did the thing where he gets in the car and then checks the rearview mirror and he's in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
It's like, it's done in a ton of movies, but it's an entertaining one for me, at least, that they do all the time in any form of media. And basically this whole thing is Clint trying to convince Kazi to go to Maya and be like, hey, drop the Ronin shit. Just drop it. He brings up, he's like, I know your boss doesn't want the attention. Get her to drop it, basically. It ends with him be like, you're gonna get my gun back, and he says, what do you think, and then throws the gun, which I thought was hilarious. I watched some reactions. I usually use that to make my notes after I watch it, just paying attention to the show, and both reactions I watched, they were both like, no, when he's like, can I get my gun back, he's like, no, what do you mean? It was just funny seeing other people react to it that way.
I thought it was funny that he was just like, Kazi was like so annoyed by that whole thing. Like, he just
so annoyed.
Like, he's so annoyed by this whole situation, I think, and so annoyed that he was getting like picked on by Clint and all that kind of stuff. I thought that the acting in that scene was fun.
Yeah, it was a very, very fun scene. Clint goes back to the safe house and then sees all the LARPers. Grills is baking snickerdoodle cookies, and they're all just hanging out. And again, we see the annoyed Clint, but like we've said before, it's less being annoyed and it's more, you know, him totally encapsulating the kind of partnership and situation he's in more than being annoyed with it. But there's definitely things that definitely still annoy him, like this situation. He even mentions, like, I say to retrieve my arrows on start of play, and then the LARPer goes, "We're a guild."
Yeah. I personally wanted to spend more time in that apartment because I feel like they had a great time, like, dressing that apartment. I don't know if, like, there's like a ton of movie posters in the background. Even in Kate's aunt's apartment, which is their safe house. That's Kate's aunt, yep. Right? Then there's like a bunch of posters, which one of them she uses dry erase Sharpie.
That was really funny.
Like the glass. But I feel like they're doing a good job where these characters are obviously nerds and they have like a copy of a Tomb Raider video game was in the background. And there was like Dungeons and Dragons posters on the walls and stuff. Like these guys just are living their dream. And they're so hyped to be helping Avengers right now. And even the police officer was like more than happy to tamper with the evidence in that situation.
Yeah, which is hilarious. But, you know, I mean, would that happen in real life? Maybe, but it's a Marvel show. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, it might happen. I mean, it's not like cops are the best people most of the time. You know what I mean? But it's not like people have, I'm an Avenger to loom over people. You know, there's nothing like that. You can kind of be like, yeah. I mean, I guess famous people could probably get away with that. It'd be kind of like the same thing, right?
I was not anticipating the LARPers coming back. So I know we talked about Grills in that episode. True. So I enjoyed seeing them again. I think that was a good way to play it off. And they may not be done to this point. Like they might come back because they're like designing costumes for them.
That makes me worried for Grills, man.
Sure.
Makes me worried for Grills. Don't want to see that guy die. All right. But if he does, don't say I didn't warn you.
Okay. I know.
Okay. That's all I'm saying. But yes, like the costumes. Seems like they were making a trade, like, hey, Kate will get the materials for all of them. Hey, make two extra costumes. So we're gonna see some new costumes for Kate and Clint by the end of this, which is interesting. I'm guessing Clint's gonna be decked out in some purple.
That's yep,
probably a safe bet.
But then, they've showed him in promotional material wearing like a traditional Hawkeye outfit. So I am curious, like when he's going to get that, and maybe that is the costume. Which it's a very nice costume if that's the one. But then Kate keeps showing up in costume, and I don't know where she gets that one from. But it's like very.
I think it's just because she was just rich, and she had someone make it for her. Probably, you know, because before this, she was, you know, she wasn't cut off or anything. So she showed up in the first scene wearing it. So I'm guessing she was probably like, yo, make me the sick suit. You know, it's like, obviously she's very smart and can use her resources well. So I'm sure she could easily find someone to make her some sort of suit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Clint gets a text from Laura saying that the Rolex hasn't been destroyed and that there's a tracker in it. The fuck is up with this watch, man? It's got a tracker in it. you know, he has to check. He gives her a location. So they go to the location. They stake out a spot on top of a roof across from it. So Clint's pretty much saying, hey, I got this. I'm going to go check this place out. You go watch. He looks over. Kate's already gone. She's on the street, just walks across the street, doesn't pay attention. You know, cars are honking at her. And then she takes the elevator with this old man, who she says, I'm talking to an Avenger, which I thought was hilarious. Especially her voice. She's like, I'm talking to an Avenger.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'm going to take my bag now. And you hear Clint in the airbase just, don't do this. But she gets up to the apartment.
I was a little annoyed at that sequence. Just like, she is so bullheaded. Like, I think, like, there's a line to where she's going to have to, like, learn to listen. Which I know the episode ends with them, like, potentially, you know, going separate ways because of some of this stuff. I was just like, okay, like, she's got to rein it in a little bit. I know that that's her character and it's fun, but I was like kind of rolling my eyes a little bit where it's like, okay, you need to start listening to Clint because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I feel you there, but it is very much her character. And I do like when shit gets like really real, she gets like shook as fuck. That's I like that attention to detail. You know what I mean? There's this one podcast I was doing. He said the biggest problem he's had with the show is that Kate seems to be able to hang with people. And as I was rewatching the end fight that we're about to get to, she gets her ass handed to her. Like hard. Okay. She doesn't like hand. Interesting. She's just kind of there. And she obviously helps out with some stuff with shooting arrows and everything like that. But when it's like hand to hand combat, she's getting her ass kind of beat. Like, and we'll get to it in a second. But
yeah.
She breaks in the apartment. She knows that there's flashing strobing lights in the corners. She shoots some of the ooze arrows into that to kind of block them. And she finds the watch. And she also, what you mentioned earlier, she finds a list of Clint's family. All the names and ages for most of the children, but not the youngest one. Which I don't know if that's like someone found out something new. But obviously, and it's revealed as is Maya's apartment. Those are silent alarms. And back to the watch. So Clint says something about the watch, saying this watch is tied to someone who's been out of the game for a while, and it'll blow their cover and lead to them dying, possibly. So my thought was maybe this was like a gift from Laura to Clint, and somehow this would give away Laura. But then me thinking about the list of the names, they already knew her name. So it'd be kind of weird if it was her, but like, who else could this belong to that's going to blow their cover? You know what I mean? Like, obviously it can't be Natasha. For one, Natasha's stuff got leaked in End of Winter Soldier and now she's dead, so it doesn't matter. Like, Felipe said, like, oh, could it be Nick Fury? And I was like, well, the world thinks Nick Fury is dead, and the same thing with Winter Soldier. All of his shit got leaked, unless it's revealing that he's still alive. But how would a watch reveal that he's still alive? Because my thought with Laura was like, oh, if it was a gift and there was like some sort of engraving on the back that could give something away. But maybe there's some kind of, since there's a transmitter, maybe there's some sort of something inside of it.
That's, you know, like, that's what I'm picking up. I think that there's something inside the watch, like, but I don't know who or what it is. I mean, at this point, that's what we throw out. Mephisto or Mr. Fantastic and Reed Richards or something like that, but something ridiculous.
But Mephisto confirmed he's in the fucking watch, man.
Yeah, it's actually like a pocket dimension.
Hell is inside this fucking watch. Mephisto is there.
But at some point, it's something to do with S.H.I.E.L.D. and somebody's identity that is close to this situation. And then obviously it ties into the fact that Maya wanted the watch and has the watch. So there's something there, but I haven't figured that one out yet.
Yeah, and is the watch, was that supposed to be for Uncle? We don't know. We don't know if like that was the whole thing. He wanted the watch for some reason. He knows something about the watch. We have no idea. But then Clint reveals that it's Maya's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
You hear him struggling with someone, and then Maya confronts Kate. They start fighting, and Clint says, "Kate's here with me." And that's when I thought, "Oh, yeah, here we fucking go. Here we fucking go." So they fight it out. Clint shoots over a wire to have her kind of, you know, what word am I looking for?
Rappel down or what? Yeah,
across. She gets stuck in the middle.
Zip line.
Funny. Zip line. Yes. Rappel was a good word too, but it wasn't exactly. But thank you for finishing my thoughts as always. Goes over. It's revealed that someone in a mask is fighting Clint. Kate gets over there to help her out. And this is the point, like, Kate gets her ass beat. She gets thrown over to the side of the building. But a good note is that before she gets thrown off, she gets clipped. Like, they clip her to a line and then throws her off the building. So it wasn't to kill her. It was just to get her out of the way, which is a very, very cool note. And as she falls off, you see Clint just lose his mind, because obviously it's a very big parallel to her, to him and Natasha. He looks over, and as he's looking over, the Boromir score comes back, very, very prominent this time, and you can see him just, like, reliving it in his mind. She's like, pull me up, and then he cuts the wire and says, no, get out of here. Kate being Kate does not take that at all, comes back up to join the fight, shoots an arrow that kind of explodes everything, also shoots Maya in the shoulder, and she kind of gets the fuck out of there. She also gets hit with a widow's bite, which is more and more confirmation after Clint unmasks her, that is Yelena Belova, which, if you don't remember from the Black Widow after credit scene, that Val sent her to kill Clint. And another note about that scene is that Clint is shown in the Ronin outfit without the mask on. So somehow Val knows that Clint was Ronin, which she knows a lot of fucking shit. And I don't know when we're ever going to find out how or why, but I'm sure eventually we will. Another thing I forgot to bring up, when Eleanor sent Clint away and Clint said he couldn't drop the case, she makes a phone call. Now, I know some people could probably think, like, oh, if Kingpin is uncle, she could be calling uncle. She could have called Val. And that's why Yelena showed up. Like, the post-credit scene could have taken place, like, say, right after that, like, during episode 4. Like, right when she called her and made that phone call, they could have talked on the phone. And then the next day, Yelena was there. Or the next night, Yelena was there. Like, it could have been... we don't know when that took place in the timeline. Like it easily could have been those two happened like right next to each other.
You got my wheel spin on that, because I kind of assumed that Eleanor was calling Kingpin. Because then my thought is, why does so? Then I was starting to think that maybe Val works for Kingpin. But again, then we're making some assumptions and conclusions that the show hasn't told us yet. So we're speculating at that point. Because then I'm wondering why does Val want Clint dead? And my assumption would be that Ronan did something to somebody in Val's circle that they're trying to eliminate him. But I don't know if any of that matters. My wheels are spinning on that.
It could not matter. My thought, even after the Black Widow scene, of her wanting to get rid of Clint, is that I think she's forming the Thunderbolts, which will be the government's version of the Avengers. So she probably wants, there's an OG Avenger still around?
I want to get rid of them. Yeah.
It's like, how can she get rid of the Hulk, really? Which maybe we'll see in She-Hulk with Abomination coming back. Maybe. That's pure speculation too, but like, you know, Thor's gone, Captain America's gone, Tony Stark's gone. Black Widow's gone. Thor's not dead. He's just in space. you know, and maybe she doesn't know what to do with Hulk, and maybe Abomination's the answer for that. But Hawkeye's the only regular dude left. So maybe she figured, hey, I have an assassin on my team. I'm just going to take him the fuck out. Maybe.
Yeah.
It could be your reason, too. Maybe Ronan fucked some shit up for her, too. We have no idea. We have no idea the level to what he did. Because obviously they talk about Mexico in Endgame. We see him in Japan. Obviously he had a big deal to do with it in the New York City Criminal Underground. So we have no idea what he did in those 5 years. Seemingly a fucking lot. You know?
Right. I love it. He was busy.
He did some work.
No kids, no wife. He's going to work.
Just death. Pure death.
Yeah. I thought that Kate was in Yelena's apartment. So I thought that it was going to be flipped. So when the reveal was that it was Maya's apartment and Yelena was on the roof, I was expecting it to be the opposite, where that was Yelena's apartment. Gotcha. And so that was we all kind of knew it was going to happen. And then especially when they started to fight, which I roll my eyes when they kept her mask on, like, that long. I was like, just take it off. Like, we know who it is at this point. But I thought that sequence on the roof was really cool. I thought, you know, going through talking about Kate, like, obviously she was overmatched by both people she was fighting, Maya and Yelena, like, kind of handed it to her a couple different times. And I'm an emotional viewer. And so when she went off the roof, like my eyes like welled up. Like I thought that they played that so well with that, with Natasha's fate going off of the cliff and stuff like that. And you could see, again, you could see the pain in Clint's eyes that he was like, no, I can't lose another person like this. And then tying it into the promise that he made to Eleanor that he would keep her daughter safe. Like, that's when he's like, you cannot be here, because things just got very real, that there is now a Black Widow who's tailing us. And I thought that was a cool sequence.
Yeah, me too. And it's interesting because obviously he knows she's a Black Widow assassin. Does she know that it's Natasha's sister?
I don't think so. It didn't seem like it, but
no, not at all. It didn't seem like it at all. Like, does he even know that she had like a sister at all, or like a family? Like, we have no idea if any of the Avengers knew that she had like another family because she called the Avengers her family. You know what I mean? Like, we have no idea if anything that's taking place there.
That very much enjoyed. Very much enjoyed Maya just tapping out after she got shot by an arrow.
She got hit by the Widow's bite, got shot in the shoulder, and she's like, "Fuck this, I'm out."
Just like went down the stairs, was like, "I'm out." Like, just ignore me.
I'm good. See you later. They actually released a really cool featurette with Alakwa Cox in it, talking about like her experience of playing the role, because this is her first acting. I think we talked about this last episode, but this is her first acting role ever, and the way she can emote with, you know, just her face pretty much and her actions is ungodly impressive.
It's
for what she's done.
I'm excited to see more of her. I'm really, really stoked to see more Yelena in the preview for the next episode. She catches like a Gatorade bottle and says like hello or something, and just like the way she says the line, I think I'm like, she's just gonna be a really good addition to the show, and want to see more of characters like that.
Yeah, like you kind of said earlier, there's a lot to kind of finish up in these last two episodes. I'm very interested to see how that happens. You know, there's the whole Rolex, the kingpin of it all, now the Yelena of it all, and what's up with Eleanor and Jack. You know, I mean, it's not like a overwhelming amount, but it definitely needs to see like some of the stuff needs to get answered.
With how efficient they've been with the storytelling so far, like even just like resolving the fight between Jack and Clint, like that was very economical in how they did that. I believe that they're going to be able to do it. I'm starting to allow myself to be disappointed that Wilson Fisk and Kingpin will be a post-credit reveal. And that's okay. It's okay. I really hope he's like in it more.
According to the producer, Trin Tran, she said the next episode is supposed to blow up the internet. So
okay, all right, let's go. I'm down for it.
I don't know. Maybe he shows up next week. I don't know what's going to blow up the internet other than Wilson Fisk, and it could be something crazy. Like, there's a theory out there from that footage they've shown that has a little more of Yelena. You see her fighting in the same gear from the Black Widow movie as well.
Correct. And who's she fighting?
Yeah, people on the internet seem to think it's Sharon Carter.
Okay.
Which would be wild. Like,
yeah, I don't need that.
I feel like it'd be another foil, unless she was just working for Wilson Fisk. That's who she was talking to on the phone. If they explain like that, like, oh, Sharon's, you know, here's Wilson Fisk, here's Sharon, here's like Eleanor or something like that. You know what I mean? Like that would be kind of cool. Like it's alluding to that scene I said I hoped would be at the end. Again, I'm not going to be disappointed if it's not there. But, you know, it's like a ton of people, top people from the criminal underworld being like, we need to get this motherfucker, you know, we need to get Clint Barton and Kate Bishop. But maybe not. I thought two people were like, oh, it's Sharon Carter. And I'm like, man, that'd be kind of out of left field. So we'll see. I have no idea. I said earlier, I have no idea how the series is going to end.
Yeah.
No fucking clue.
And I'm not trying to speculate too much because we'll know next week and the week after that how it goes. But they definitely do like a fight in some sort of like Madison Square Garden or like 30 Rock type of plaza where and Clint's wearing a suit in a couple scenes. So there's a couple big set pieces that we have coming up.
And there's the party too. It's now been revealed that it's Eleanor's fundraiser Christmas party that they're going to be at. Okay. But we've seen them wearing a suit and running through and getting shot at, which is a note that something very similar happens in the comics too. They infiltrate a party. And I think it is Madame Mask's party.
Interesting.
I don't know if she's going to be Madame Mask. I have no idea.
Yeah, there's so many different ways it can go. But yeah, I love this episode. I thought it was a great episode. And I think they're doing such a good job of tying in those personal moments, sitting on a couch, drinking cocktails and watching movies and having fun, and then digging into the emotions of that. But then also, I think the action sequences have been pretty cool so far. Bringing in Yelena, I think we all kind of knew it. But I mean, Florence Pugh was so good in Black Widow, and a good actor that I'm excited to see her in this. And I think even just getting her and Kate in the same room, like Yelena's spunkiness and sassiness, tied together with Kate, I think that that'll be a fun combo. Because I have to imagine that Clint very quickly can sway Yelena. I don't see that going out too much longer, because he's like, time out. Like, I was best friends with Black Widow. Like, what's going on here?
Right. There was one thing we both missed. And it was the scene where Kate goes to shoot Yelena, and Yelena just like moves her head no, and she retreats from shooting it. One, I think she was shook. Two, I think she really listened to what Clint said. Said the best shot he took was the one he didn't take. And it's an amazing parallel, because new Hawkeye, Kate Bishop, new Black Widow, Yelena. It's, mm-hmm. you know, parallels, man.
Yeah.
So that was a really, really great moment. My friend Joel even texted me. He's like, why didn't she shoot? And I was like, yo, she was fucking shook. Like, I was like, that look she gave her, she was like, I'm good.
Well, I don't know what podcast you're referring to, but I do think, like, Kate is a trained archer. She's a trained fighter. We've seen all that. Yeah, yeah. And so she's able to hold her own, but I think she's definitely getting her ass kicked, like, over and over again.
He even mentioned, he's like, yeah, I get it. You know, she's a trained archer. She's a trained martial artist and stuff. He's like, but she shouldn't be able to hang with these people. And I'm like, she barely has. Like, even in that first episode, she, like, barely makes it out of there. You know what I mean?
Right.
And she gets so overwhelmed that the only reason she does is because of Clint. Like,
well, in the things that she's excelled at, she's competent enough to have been able to get away from Maya, to get out the window. Clint shot that arrow, so she escapes because of Clint. And then when she gets on the rooftop, she's able to do one shot where she does like that sonic wave arrow that knocks everybody out for a second. And like, those were like the two things that she like kind of was competent in. But for the rest of the time, she was like trying to fight. And there was this scene where she gets, I think it's Maya, like flips her over, and her back like lands straight on the edge of the wall. Like,
that was scary too. She, I was like, no. Yeah. I was like, don't fall.
Like, she got her butt kicked. And one note too, Yelena's fighting style. Like, she did like the superhero pose, and she was obviously doing some like, she was obviously doing some like widow moves in that. So that was cool to see.
Also, I do think the mask was on so long because I think this shot was, Florence Pugh wasn't there.
Yeah, stunt double, of course.
It was a stunt double, and then when you see her face, you can see the background super blurry.
Yeah.
And you can't see her. You know what I mean? I think she was, you know, imposed in.
I know that's true.
I'm thinking that's why. That's
oh, why, it's 100% you know. Why. That's why they have all her the masks.
Her mask, Spider-Man. It is a, well, it could be a you know, Night Monkey made his way to Nightwing. The U.S. Yeah. Yeah. But it is a nod to one of her comic looks. She like became this weird like adaptoid thing. I'm sure if you search Yelena Hawkeye, the image will show up. But it's pretty cool. It does look a little different, but you can definitely tell it's an homage to that. Yeah. Which I thought, I always love when they do stuff like that. It's really cool. But also, yes, Night Monkey confirmed to be in the U.S.
I would like to find out
specifically a London. Yeah. He's back, baby.
I think we'll get answers to find out like when Yelena, I know last week I said maybe she's been here the whole time and she's just been trailing Hawkeye, but maybe she did get the call that like Ronan is, you know, or Clint is in New York right now. And maybe that's why she showed up there. But I still have a feeling that she's like kind of been on the tail of them for a little bit.
She could have been. Yeah, for sure. I can see it either way. I think it'd be really cool to see that kind of connection.
Yeah.
Like in that kind of time. Because obviously a lot of stuff is kind of loose. So like, oh, we kind of know when it takes place in a general term. Like, oh, this took place like Endgame. The last battle of Endgame was like October 2024 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, or 2023. And then we're in 2024 right now. The end of 2024 with Hawkeye. And Far From Home ended in like the summer of 2024 or something like that. Which I guess they posted, this is the last note I want to end on, but they posted the opening scene of No Way Home, which I think just takes place right after that. I didn't watch it, but I just want to wait for them. The movie's this week. I can wait for it.
I just
want to experience over the rest of the movie. But someone did post a screenshot and he flies by a Roger the Musical billboard, which I thought was really cool.
Heck yeah. I was like, what I was going to say, man. Next next week when we tune in, we'll have watched another episode of Hawkeye and Spider-Man, which, I mean, it's time. It's time for Spider-Man, and that's really exciting.
Final Spider-Man note. Monday, an episode will be dropping. I'm getting joined by two other podcasting friends, and we're going to rank every Spider-Man movie from our favorite to least favorite and talk about them leading up to No Way Home. So obviously every movie, pretty much every movie besides probably Spider-Verse, but we're including that one because we have to, you just have to include that one. You gotta, but yeah, I'm very excited to have that conversation. And you can hear me talk a lot about how Tobey Maguire is a piece of shit in those movies, which I got into a very long discussion with in the Facebook group this week. If you haven't seen that, it happened.
My two cents on that is those movies hold a very, very special place in my heart because they came out like 2001, 2002. Like we were just like little kids back then and absolutely love it, but I don't think they're great. And that's my hot take for the day.
Not that much of a hot take. I think the only one that's really great is the second one. And even then, I mean, you'll see my ranking. It's not as high as probably most people. That's what I'll say.
I love it.
And the rest are definitely not high either.
No, Amazing Spider. I feel bad for the Amazing Spider-Man. You guys can talk about that on Monday, but I feel bad for all the people involved in those movies.
They have some really high points in those movies, and that's what I'll say. I'll be diving deep into those, to all of the Spider-Man movies. But I just rewatched those like a month ago. I've rewatched the Raimi trilogy like multiple times in the past couple of years, so I don't need to rewatch those. I did a whole fucking 3-hour long podcast breaking it down. I'm very familiar with those, believe me. And I just rewatched Homecoming, a delight, and then I'm probably going to rewatch Far From Home tomorrow.
Does not get a lot of love, and I don't think I know why, because I really like it. Yeah, I really like that
one. I think it's like one of Sam's favorite Marvel movies, like not even joking.
No, it's wonderful. Yeah,
she threw her phone in the post-credit scenes.
Sure.
She was like, "What the fuck?" You know, she was freaking out. You know, and I don't really see her react to a lot of stuff. Like she did like Endgame, Infinity War, stuff like that. Yeah. She loved Shang-Chi and everything like that. But I never really see her react like that. And she was like freaking out.
I am here for Jake Gyllenhaal in Mysterio. He's so good.
He's coming back. He's not. He's not. I don't think he's dead. I don't think he's dead.
So
we'll see it.
All right, bro. We'll come on, bro.
We'll get out of here.
Let's go, bro.
Well, we'll be back next week. We'll talk. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about Spider-Man: No Way Home. We'll give our little non-spoiler thoughts, and then we'll talk about Hawkeye Episode 5, the one that's supposed to break the internet. We'll see.
Let's break it.
We'll see how much breaks the internet.
All right, later, bros.
See you later, nerds. See you later, bro.